Welcome to Victoria Rumble Room. It's an island show that likes to shine a spotlight on issues on Vancouver Island, but also British Columbia, Canada, and around the globe, around the planet. And I'm Robin Adair. Joining me across in his planetary lair, Planet Tulip to be exact, is the Croatian sensation, John Jurisic. And Johnny, 2024 is already packed with so many issues, and the year's hardly even started.
I am overwhelmed, Robin. I say that every time, and every time, and every week. It's a little bit more overwhelming. We've got important issues to cover and some viewer mail, of which we get tons of it, to review. But first, a word on one of the biggest housing developments ever proposed on the South Island, one of the biggest in the province, the Bayview Roundhouse proposal in the Inner Harbor. We talk a ton about lack of housing. Here's an answer. Here's a solution. How are governments going to respond? As many as 11 buildings on the Vic West property, which is also the site of the old rail yard and roundhouse. You know, Victoria Council now has had hearings on zoning, and opponents continue to think the project is too high and too dense for our community.
And in contrast, the developer Ken Mariash says there needs to be enough housing density to justify this huge investment. And there's going to be a retail center around the roundhouse, but they need a lot of people to come in and make those businesses work. And Mariash says that he has no doubt that there is a lot of support for the validity of his project.
The councillors don't, you know, they think that good things should happen around there, that it should be usable, it should be occupied, it should be prosperous. And so having that kind of thinking isn't doing anybody any good. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, downtown is struggling.
Well, we always knew something was going to be built there. It was a question of what. I mean, we have in Victoria a history of new development in the city that respects the scale and character of Victoria. Generally, that's been a fairly low and modest scale. But if you look at developments like the Selkirk Waterfront, the rail yards that Chris LaFayette developed, the Dockside Green, the new Capitol Park behind the legislature, these are all modestly scaled developments. They've got a reasonable degree of density, but nothing like this.
I love what I do. I don't want to fail at anything, including this.
Robin, we'll have a lot more on this Bayview plan on our next Rumble Room as decisions unfold from the Victoria City Hall meetings. But perhaps we could spend a minute or two at this moment marveling about the rumors coming out of Victoria Council chambers. First, I can't believe it's happening. We hear remuneration will soon be on the table, and some rookie councillors would like some huge pay increases.
No kidding, John. To be clear on this, Victoria Mayor Marianne Alto is on the record as saying she is uncomfortable with council awarding itself a pay increase. And you do have to wonder, what's being talked about behind closed doors? And now I've heard some suggestions. There are councillors, and a lot of them are rookie councillors, who are thinking they should be paid the same as assistant deputy ministers in government. That means $150,000 a year plus for what's supposed to be a part-time job. Now, another rumor out of City Hall is around a name change, a discussion at least about a name change, that it shouldn't be Victoria. You know, we've been hearing for a long time, John, from academics, especially at UVic we've talked to, rumblings from the woke left that the name Victoria symbolizes everything that's wrong. It's colonists, it's the settlers, it's the first thing that should go out the window for reconciliation. And of course, we've already been tearing down statues of Sir John A. Macdonald, so why not? Why not Queen Victoria? And what would they change the name to? I quail to think about it. But one thing, if this council did decide to move ahead and actually have a serious look at changing the name of the city, they would need to put it to public referendum. And the masses have to decide on things like that, not woke spoon feeding. And I don't like any of that kind of messaging going on in our society. So if you have the woke community making the decision, we might have something like what happened with our Royal BC Museum, where they almost closed it. They were almost going to rip it down, and they're still looking at what they can do to reorder it. So we need to have some solid second thought.
On that happy but extraordinarily frustrating note, Robin, we shift to the unhappy situation faced by our Jewish community and those who champion the cause of the Palestinians in the Middle East. A case in point was the Belfry Theater deciding not to present a play this spring after major demonstrations, a petition, and can you believe it, graffiti by pro-Palestinian activists. The play in question at the Belfry Hotel, The Runner, which is a one-man performance of a Jewish rescue worker who goes into the West Bank and ends up rescuing a Palestinian woman. There was a three-hour meeting. After reading the review of the play, opponents walked out and spray-painted Free Palestine on the theater stairway. The review that was read was very direct.
It certainly was, John, and we've taken a look at it. And the review says, amongst other things, not only does it, The Runner, dehumanize Palestinians, but it also stereotypes Jews. All Palestinian characters are nameless, violent, knife-wielding terrorists who get eight words in the whole script. And the review goes on to say, no mention of the word occupation anywhere in the script. It's a racist play and vile apology for Israeli apartheid and war crimes.
Solomon Siegel is a leading member of the Victoria Jewish community and longtime businessman and part of a proud tradition in the city established by his father, Howie Siegel, a popular participant in the Rumble Room in the past. Solomon attended the public meeting at the Belfry and told us that the idea that they've canceled the play because some people don't like it is flat out wrong, he says. Censorship to block people from exploring art is fascist and disgusting.
There's, of course, a back and forth on this. The Palestinian supporters are very passionate, and they're very upset about the carnage going on in the Gaza right now. And I think the world is very concerned about innocent people being killed in this terrible conflict. And there's lots of feedback on what Solomon Siegel said. We ran a clip from Solomon Siegel previous to this show where he made this statement, John, that you've just outlined, talking about this being both fascist and disgusting. And here's what at least some of the viewer feedback has been. Kevin writes, we've let the inmates win. So sad. And Rena also expresses her point of view. The Belfry's decision is cowardly and, in fact, complicit with the Free Palestine crowd's use of Hamas-inspired excuses for their anti-art petition. And that's pretty clear-cut, John.
So there's angry division on this play, as there is angry division around the world on this issue. And on the war in Gaza itself, Israel is attacking Hamas. They've been fighting in the West Bank and have even crossed swords recently with Hezbollah in Lebanon. For the record, you and I both stand for a peaceful settlement. End the war, start peace talks, please.
Absolutely, John. No one in their right mind wants to see a war and see innocent people killed. It's terrible. And we both oppose, just for the record, the Jewish settlements that have been established on the West Bank. They have to be taken down. They are such a sore point. How can we have peace with the Palestinians if the Israelis keep building settlements on their territory? All it does is drive a wedge in any future talks. And for those, conversely, who suggest that Israel is an oppressor or an apartheid nation, what about the 2.5 million Muslims who are actually Israeli citizens who have full voting rights and live in Israel peacefully? And, you know, the Muslim community is screaming that Israel doesn't really have the right to exist as it does. And they are talking about the river to the sea, from the Jordan River to the ocean, to remove them all together. And you can see how the Israelis on the other side, they feel they have to do some very tough things to preserve themselves, to save themselves, because in the past, we've seen Palestinians firing missiles indiscriminately into Israel. We've seen Palestinians strapped with bombs going into public centers in Israel and creating massive carnage. Now, there's a desperation from the Palestinians. They would like a homeland. And negotiations have to take place. They have to take place to do something to build a homeland in the future. And no one wants to see this war continue, but there is certainly culpability on both sides of this. And, you know, John, I think what's really needed is an international peace force to come in and play a role, like what took place years ago on the Suez crisis in Egypt, or the Cyprus situation, or in Bosnia and Sarajevo, where people were put apart and there were neutral forces put in place to keep them from each other. And that allowed peace talks to continue and for settlements to be made. In the meantime, yes, there should be an immediate ceasefire, but it means an immediate end of attacks on both sides. And immediately, I think a third party needs to step in. And if it's the UN, that's a good idea, and Canada should play a role.
Well said, Robin. There are oftentimes I just sit back and marvel and respect your journalistic experience and knowledge. It's really an honor to be sitting beside you on the Rumble Room. However, for another perspective, we've already heard from Solomon Siegel on the Belfry dispute. So let's see what he has to say about the wider conflict from a liberal Jewish Canadian vantage point. Let's zoom him in.
Now joining us in the Victoria Rumble Room for the first time is Solomon Siegel, who is the manager of PAGS, Pagliacci's, one of my very favorite restaurants in Victoria. And it's just great to have you on the show, Solomon.
Thank you so much for having me. It's nice to be here.
Well, I wish it was under happier circumstances, but let's get right into the issues here. Let's open with the wider impressions of what's going on right across the country. Major cities like Vancouver, Toronto, New York, London, Paris. And it seems like there's these huge, huge groups of Palestinian protesters blocking highways, blocking roads. And, you know, members of the Jewish community are apparently under assault. Is that your interpretation of it?
Well, I wouldn't say there's, I wouldn't put it as pro-Palestinian or Palestinian protesters, because I'm pro-Palestinian. You know, I think there is anti Israeli protesters out there, and anti-Semitic protesters are very much within that mix of people. You know, it's not everything, but they're being tolerated within that mix. And there is, and at some level, pro-Hamas protesters as well too. But you know, the Palestinian people are the, you know, are cousins for Jews, and we can be pro-Israel and pro-Jewish and pro-Palestinian, but we and be anti-war. But there is so much hatred coming out of this and anti-Semitism. Mm-hmm. That's becoming the problem.
And we see Jewish people being stopped in the streets and screamed at. I mean, that's going beyond what we've seen before, at least in Canada.
Well, I wish we hadn't seen this before in Canada, but remember, we're a country where, you know, none is too many was the policy not too long ago. So there is historic anti-Semitism in Canada, as there is throughout the entire world. And certainly it is on the rise, it's growing. And a lot of the rhetoric is thinly veiled dog whistles and covert words towards anti-Semitism. When we see people spreading hate and using code words like Zionist, which is, let's face it, is a dog whistle for Jew. Because what Zionist means is, you know, I'm a Zionist because I believe that Israel should continue to exist. It doesn't mean that I don't believe that there shouldn't be a Palestinian state. It doesn't mean that I agree with the government of Israel. It doesn't mean that I believe that there should be. I mean, Israel is a multicultural state. You know, it's a Jewish state, but there is, you know, there's 2 million Muslims in there. There's Druze, there's Christians, there's Baha'i. There's a huge amount of faith there, and there's a secular government and stuff, and democracy. You know, and I believe that Israel has the right to exist as much as any country has the right to exist. And when people out there are saying I'm anti-Zionist, you can't just simply redefine Zionism as being the thing you don't like. Right, Zionism has a meaning behind it, and Zionism really only means that you think that Israel should exist. It doesn't mean that you think that Israel is correct in how they're dealing with this war. It doesn't mean you think that it doesn't mean you're okay with the settlements in the West Bank. It doesn't mean you're okay with racism or judicial reforms that many Israelis are not okay with. It just means that it should continue to exist as a Jewish state, just as Canada, I believe, should continue to exist and. You know, I'm not calling for the destruction of a single country. I'd like the creation of more of a Palestinian country, in fact. And if we just continue to pretend that when people are saying hate speech, they're using hate speech, they're putting From the River to the Sea up, which is clearly about killing all the Jews. That's what it's about. We can't pretend that's not hate speech.
Solomon, we've had your dad, Howie, on the Rumble Room a couple of times, and it's great that he's passed on the baton to you. So it's been always so fun listening to him. Of course, Robin knows him for many years. So glad to have you on, representing an extraordinarily vibrant viewpoint and culture. When the Israeli-Hamas conflict broke out, you spoke eloquently about the need to find a peaceful, long-term solution. But you made it very clear, as you just have, that you saw Hamas as terrorists. With this war going on and innocent people dying in Gaza, again, building upon your earlier comments, you see any possible hope for a peaceful outcome?
I always have hope for peace. I have the luxury of living in safe Victoria. I have the luxury of, really only being in charge of people's food and beverage and what music they listen to and aspects like that. So I don't need to make difficult political decisions myself. So I have the luxury of being able to believe in peace and hope that is some little part of getting towards a peaceful solution where people stop dying.
And yet people are dying there right now. And it seems that it's hard to believe the Israelis would just leave now at some point, that they'd say, okay, that's enough. We've bombed them enough. It's time to leave. It seems to me there's a will within Israel for them to see this through. And the rest of the world is standing back in I think, horror at the carnage in general, irrespective of who started this.
It is horrible. I mean, it's the carnage is horrible. Bombs going back and forth and bombing people on both sides is horrible. Rape and hostage taking and abuse of children and elders. It's all horrible. But I guess I have some hope in that when I look at the history and in 2005. When 9,000 Israeli settlers were forcibly removed by the Israeli government out of Gaza, to give Gaza to the Palestinian people, to for the first time in history to actually have a Palestine in existence, I hope that was a path towards peace, and so it is possible that even when Israel goes in and takes over land, that it gives it back, because we've seen Israel do that before. And I can't say I've ever been a fan of the current government in Israel myself, but Israel is a democratic nation, and I can hope for peace.
I happen to know, the community happens to know, that the Siegel family has always been very liberal and open-minded in its politics and social activism. Thank you for that. Your father and uncle were famous for that, as you will now be, as you're now a member of the Rumble Room.
Yeah.
Traditionally, the Canadian Jewish community has long supported Israel, mm-hmm. but not always supported everything the Israeli government does. With that being said, how frustrating is it to see Canadian Jewish businesses defaced, picketed, attacked across the country? Are you yourself worried about speaking out?
Yeah, of course I'm worried. I've been attacked. I've been attacked by directly by right-wing anti-Semites. And then more recently, it's been the left-wing anti-Semites. And I've spoken to multiple other Jewish business owners who are very much afraid and have felt they've been, you know, attacked online. They've had negative reviews put up of their businesses. And it's because they're Jewish. And there is this mindset that it's just okay, and that Jews don't really count as racism. And we are continually called, you know, made to be white, you know, like they want to erase where our history and where we came from. They want to pretend that all Jews are just these white Europeans, which is simply just not true. And, you know, sometimes I wish the right wing and the left wing would get together and pick what color I am and just let me know, you know, like, so I can know why they hate me. You know, like it's get a bit of whiplash going between colors so much. It's a scary time. And there's an apathy where people kind of feel like Jews don't count. And when they see anti-Semitism, they don't view it as the same level of racism and hatred and bigotry that they do about other marginalized minorities.
But where I think the government has failed us, and not only government, but our designated protector, community protectors, the police, etc., mm-hmm. is that free speech, as you've indicated, is starting to infringe on our general safety. And it's coded, as you've indicated. It's sometimes nuanced, but it is infringing on your and my ultimately safety in the community. And therefore, government must intervene, because how else is that going to happen? If they don't, then you have vigilantism all over the place and society starts to break down. And so to Robin's point, I am so disappointed that the government is not reacting to that piece. What, you know, if they can't get the free speech part or the hate speech part, for frig's sakes, protect the people that are being impacted by it. Please, mm-hmm. please. Well, this isn't hard.
It's got to the point now where, you know, ironically, the left has always been, I mean, the original Israeli government that started in 1949 was a left-wing government. The Golda Meir was on the left. I'm not saying they were radically left, but they were certainly more socialistic than the United States, for example.
Fairly radical at the time, you know.
Yeah, they were quite radical for the time, weren't they? I mean, even kibbutzes, yeah. really, were communes, you know, and yeah. all that stuff. Yeah. So a lot of the principles in the original Israeli society were very left-wing, and I think it's fair to say that the Jewish community, for the most part, has tended to be very liberal, both in the United States and Canada and in Europe. It's been, and yet now they're being tagged as apartheid and they're being tagged as Nazis. They're calling Israelis Nazis, which is just so must infuriate your community.
It's inherently anti-Semitic, right? And they're using these words, you know, they're using words like, you know, Nazi, because, and they're using words like genocide, because they carry such heavy anti-Semitic connotations behind them. You know, the word genocide was created about the Shoah, the Holocaust, about 6 million Jews being murdered. There's still less Jews in the world now than there was before the Holocaust. It was so bad that it wasn't enough to just say war, you know, casualties of war, and that we had to create a new word for it. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the amount of times that Jews are accused of genocide, it's fairly constant. And you know, I was reading an article in The Atlantic from about a year ago talking about the anti-Semitic nature of accusing Jews of genocide. And it was specifically about the COVID vaccine, because there was a conspiracy theory going around that Jews were using the COVID vaccine to commit genocide. So when you have a group of people that are against war, which I am as well, and feel that the severity that the people in Gaza are dealing with is far above and beyond what's acceptable, which I don't think is a valid argument. But then you jump to the word genocide, which has specific definitions, which I don't believe are met. And you refuse to debate about why those decisions are met or not, and say that, no, we have to use this word. Why? Because I don't see people using that word to that level about the Ukraine. You know, and I don't see people even really talking much about the Uyghurs, or, you know, what's happening in Darfur and Northern Africa and all these different areas where there are genocides happening in the world, right? There are horrific wars happening in the world. But the amount of energy put in towards the single small Jewish country and the need to use charged language around it needs to be questioned. There is constant charged language that are essentially talking points from Hamas, which is a genocidal organization that has stated very clearly that they want to kill every Jew. They want to kill my family here in Canada too. They want a caliphate. They want to take over the entire area and drive everybody who's not Muslim out. Right. So, and they turn around, this genocidal organization turns around and go, oh, Israel is the one doing genocide. It's, you know, it's a page out of Trump's book. You just immediately accuse your enemy of doing the thing that you're doing. And then all of a sudden it becomes a debate when it isn't.
It's always good to hear from a voice in Victoria. In this case, it's a voice from the Jewish community, Solomon Siegel, a very eloquent a spokesperson for that community. We're also open to speaking to a member of the pro-Palestinian community if they would care to join us in the Rumble Room. We want to try to be fair on this program, but the fairness to us is it's not black and white. It has to be a discussion of how we can find peace for both sides. And you want to wave fingers and say he's the guilty party or they're the guilty party. I just don't see how you get there. And we'll certainly have Solomon Siegel back in the future. And a final word now on the argument. In general, we have a little bit more viewer mail. Another letter I'd like to share with you. This is from an old friend of mine back even to my university days, a fellow by the name of Tom, very successful in business on the West Coast, and also a very strong supporter of Palestine. And he writes, "The Israeli army does not care about civilians. As for Hamas using hospitals and schools as cover, that is the Israeli narrative. Check out how many illegal settlers have murdered Palestinians on the West Bank. Membership in Hamas has tripled." And I should also mention that Tom doesn't buy the coverage that we see in the media, that international media has been very active in the Gaza reporting. And he says that, the fact that it's reported that the schools and the hospitals are basically fronts for Hamas operations and people are being used as human shields. Tom says that he really questions this because he says that the international media is controlled by big business. Mm. And I'll let you decide what he means when he says that. So I don't agree with that. I think that there is international media that has legitimacy, and even Al Jazeera, which they all have their own slant, but I do think that there is definitely a situation there where it's just terrible from both sides, and we need to find some way to resolve this. And on that happy note, and we're a little preachy on the show today, John, on that happy note, we're ready to wrap up another Rumble Room.
Well, the Rumble Room has a lot to say, and it appears a lot of people are agreeing with us. So great to have an opportunity to dig into these topics. Great to have an opportunity to sit beside such a well-respected reporter and journalist as yourself, We really appreciate all of the folks that join us and that are part of the nearly 1.6 million. I often forget the million. 1.6 people, not such a thing doesn't exist, who viewed the Victoria Rumble Room to date since our humble beginnings a year and a half ago. And listen, here's how you can follow us. Facebook is our mothership. Lots of activity on Twitter. All of the interviews on YouTube. We have a podcast. We have an Instagram page. And we get a lot of chatter on TikTok as well. And you know what, Robin? Unfortunately, that's it for me. I remain your Croatian sensation. And as you stated at the beginning of the show, guardian of Tulip Street. My name is John Jurisic.
And I'm Robin Adair, and I consider myself the guardian of one of our key messages on this show. Rumble on.